Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Welcome in, everybody. Season has started. Coast to Coast continues to roll along. New episode brought to you by Johnny T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com. All right, welcome in. Appreciate you guys being here. A new episode of Inside Carolina's Coast to Coast podcast coming at you hard, fast, and in a hurry. And man, we've actually got real basketball to talk about now. Season started. There's actually real games that have taken place. We've got analysis of actual players and playing styles and minutes and you name it. And I'm excited to do it. Appreciate everybody being here. Hey, give me a good Macho Man Randy Savage elbow drop on that subscribe button if you have not yet. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, to this podcast, however you consume this show. We want you to be a part of it regularly. We want to make sure that you're automatically getting it to your feed. So subscribe, rate, and review. We appreciate rate, reviews, and all feedback. It's good stuff. Trust me, we take it to heart. We try to clean up on it. Unless you're a goober and you give us some stupid review, then yeah, we treat you the way you should be treated. But all that aside, I'm just Joey Powell, your host. Happy to be here once again. With me, as always, the two guys that bring the information that you're here to hear. Sean Moran, Sherelle McMillan. Sean, how's the West Coast?
70 degrees. Can't complain.
I just want to point out that if you want to throw weather in our face, I will say I'll be eating Thanksgiving dinner 3 hours before you. So get some, sir. Sherelle, how you living, man?
I'm good. My spirit's still trying to recover from Saturday.
That didn't happen.
But I'm good.
See, don't bring us down. We're trying to start with positivity and high expectations, a good feeling, and positive vibes only, Sherelle. Rel don't kill my vibe.
I wasn't talking about that. See, I was talking about something else from Saturday.
Oh, you're talking about something different. Saturday, where like you went to Home Depot and they were out of like 2.5-inch wood screws.
Exactly.
Yeah, hate that.
That's what frustrating. It was. That's the only thing that happened on Saturday.
That is a legit vibe killer. I'm with you. Guys, we've got a big show lined up. So without further ado, let's get rolling. In recognition of the season, tonight's show, we're going to do players that I'm thankful for. No, we're absolutely not going to do that because that is low-hanging fruit and no prep radio. For any of you guys who listen to talk radio out there, if you ever hear your host doing that, it's basically, hey, it's the holidays and I'm mailing this show in. We are not going to do that because you expect more of us out there. So what I figure we would do is run down. There's a quick highlight in the recruiting world for North Carolina basketball. In this sense, all we got to say is Sim Wilcher and Zayden High both signed. Sherelle, they had different ceremonies at their schools. Everything went as planned. Next steps for those guys are what exactly?
So their seasons get underway. Well, High season's already underway. Wilcher's gets underway, I think, next week. Both have some ESPN+/national television games. So we'll make sure that we post that when those games are upcoming. But it's playing their seasons. It's trying to win for a high is trying to win a national title. Wiltshire is trying to win a state title. And then for both of them is seeing if they can make the McDonald's All-American game. I think Wiltshire has a good shot. I think High has a good amount of work to do. It would be pretty surprising, but you never know what can happen during a year, especially on a loaded team and a high-profile team like he has. So those are the next step for those guys. You can check out the releases that Hubert Davis sent out on both, talking about what he liked and why they recruited them. I think those went out the day that both of them signed.
And obviously, if anything, you know, transpires during the season regarding those guys, we'll bring it to you. Recruiting is going to be quiet for a little while just because, you know, this classic season started for high school players, and, you know, UNC's kind of got their own season they're worried about. And I'm sure Sean will be watching these guys as much as he can as things come about. And when he has new things he's picked up on their games, obviously we'll bring it to you here. So, guys, moving away from the recruiting side of things, let's talk about an actual season. The 2022 season and this iteration of the North Carolina Tar Heel basketball team has started in earnest. They are 4-0. They are number one in the country, have remained number one for the first 5 weeks of the season. And then things are going to kind of change. I think if we want to talk about those first four games, I think fans probably are not happy with things. But, Sean, I'll come to you first. What did you see out of those first four games that you liked from the Tar Heels?
Good question. I mean, it's been a few, now 2 weeks since we've been able to watch this new version play after talking about them all summer. in terms of things that I liked, you know, it's a good question. I'd say there's more that I've disliked, but we'll try not to be too pessimistic right off the bat. You know, coming from the bench, it was good to see Puff get some playing time against James Madison. So that was nice, especially, you know, before we were talking about transfers, you know, was he going to start or Styles? So I think working him into the mix, that's going to be huge just from a depth perspective and something a little different than Pete Nance. Pete Nance is definitely not Brady Manick. I think we tried to talk about that all summer, but after the first game, it does look he's getting a little more comfortable, but it's still going to take some time. But you can, even last game, you could see they're trying to do a few things differently to get him open, just given he doesn't have that, you know, rapid fire release that Manick did. You know, the other thing, Caleb loves attacking the basket. I'm sure we can get into that more. So there's a lot of, I'd say, individual things that have liked. Defensively, the effort has been pretty good. And, you know, they've definitely shown some growth on that side, but a lot of question marks that still remain. And I think going into this Thanksgiving weekend, we'll start to either get answered or brought to light in terms of some of the competition.
Yeah, there's plenty of time to talk about, you know, things that are cause for concern, and we'll get to it as we move along with the show. But Shrell, same question. Give me a couple things you liked after seeing this team in the first four games of the Smith Center.
I like Seth Trimble's defense that has jumped off the screen, especially when he's paired with Lukey Black and Pete Nance. So that's been tremendous. Pete Nance's defense has been quite the surprise for me personally. I knew that he was skilled offensively. He was a good passer, that he would fit in and that he'd be able to kind of mesh with the team. But I did not expect him right now. I think he's almost at 2 blocks a game. Didn't expect that. Didn't expect the way he can kind of move, you know, across screens and move on the court. So he's a little, his lateral quickness to me is a little deceiving. It's a little better than it looks like, you know, just watching from afar. So that's been good. And then there's been a couple of good halves, a couple of good 10 minutes. There hasn't been a complete game, I would say, yet. So just knowing that they're capable is a bit different than it was last year when you were still trying to figure out exactly how they would look. And then Armando Bacot, when they give him the ball, when he gets the ball on the post, is clearly one of the best players in the country. I think he's proven that between this past Sunday's game and then the second half against College of Charleston. So I think we know the strength of the team is still, you know, pounding the ball into Armando Bacot, and everything else pivots off of that. So those are the things that I think have been impressive slash good thus far.
So you and Sean both mentioned something that I want to start with tonight. I feel like this team has shown a defensive identity early in the season. And I think there's individual identities of the players But I think this team has actually shown flashes that it can be a really good lockdown defensive unit, regardless of who's on the floor. And I think that may portend well as the offense tries to figure things out. Sherrill, looking back at last year, when it felt like North Carolina couldn't stop anybody at times early in the season, do you think this is something where we've seen it in instances early in the season? Do you think this is something they can maintain? And if so, how do they do that?
Yeah, I definitely do. I think part of it is their size. I mean, we talked about this all offseason. This is a big team. They're formidable when, you know, talk about you get off the bus and the all bus team, they look like they can do things just walking off the bus. I mean, 6'10", 6'8.5". Caleb Love is 6'4.5", and then RJ Davis is 6 foot. But then you can bring Seth Trimble in along with Prof Johnson, and you have another 6'8" guy, another 6'3" guy. So a lot of length, which is really difficult, as everybody knows, for shooters. Like, the longer somebody's arms are when they're closing out, it makes it harder to see the rim, harder to shoot. And then if you do decide to drive, you've got 6'10" Armando Bacot standing there. And I think the biggest difference this year is that when Armando Bacot goes to the bench, you have Pete Nance there who can block shots and who has the length to kind of scare guys off from trying to drive all the way to the lane. That was a big thing for a lot of the season last year, was guys just getting to the lane and getting to the basket really easy. And I think this year, having Nance along with Bacot, and then having Nance to back up Bacot, when that second unit kind of plays together, it's much more difficult to score on UNC. And I was just looking at the numbers, and obviously, four games, but their defensive 2-point percentage is the lowest it's been since 2012 through four games. And that was the team that had John Henson and Tyler Zeller in the middle. So kind of similar, obviously not, you know, the same guys, but just showing that it's hard to drive in when you've got two huge guys on the court at the same time.
Sean, I want to ask you a similar question. This team's makeup is different than last year. We've talked about it ad nauseum over the summer. How much does having an actual rim protector like a Pete Nance, who can play the four, play the five, assuming UNC is going to work Jalen Washington in at some point, but then you have really good perimeter defenders like Leaky Black, like Seth Trimble, which Sherrill mentioned earlier, and I love his defense, and Caleb Love and RJ Davis, who have shown that they can be quite tenacious as well. How has just the minor tweaks in this personnel grouping made for such a better potential defensive unit?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really putting all those pieces together. I think in the past, whether it's early last year, a lot of years in the past, if a team is moving the ball a few times, UNC was going to be out of position and all, you know, chasing players down, and it was going to result in a wide open shot. I think you're seeing that a lot less right now, but you know, it goes back to part of it, and I wouldn't say Leakey's had a true lockdown game. Not that he's needed it, even though Noah Friedel from JMU shot, you know,
0-12.
Yeah, 0-12, and didn't even, you know, was always looking for Leakey over his back shoulder. But I think you have that as kind of your center point. And then last year we talked about the lack of shot blocking. Armando proved to be, I'd say, decent when in position, just given his size. But I think now that you have two guys, the concern Sherrill was talking about, being more impressed with Pete Nance's lateral ability, which I have as well. I think that's still going to be a question mark when teams look to attack him better with better athletes from the perimeter. But the bigs have been able to stay, even when they get switched in pick and rolls, they've been able to stay and contain the guard. So they're right there for, you know, pretty good shot block attempts. And then, you know, Caleb has been putting in, I think, a more focused effort defensively, getting through ball screens, recovering, putting pressure. RJ has as well. I think the one weakness, you know, in Charleston was the guards are getting posted up. So there wasn't really those help opportunities, and they're taking advantage of RJ's size at times, but for the most part, they've been playing together, putting pressure on. And I would love to talk about this in a little bit offensively, this statistic, but in terms of assists to field goals made, UNC defensively is ranked 7th in the country right now, which shows that there's not a lot of easy shots. They're making opponents work, and they're not letting guys just blow by them and get easy opportunities. So they are working as a team from a defensive perspective. And I think that's shown so far, but I think still room to grow.
So one of the people that we called out there during that rundown was Caleb Love. And I think most Tar Heel fans had all sorts of expectations for Caleb Love coming into the season, and rightfully so. He's shown flashes of being an elite player. He absolutely just blew everybody's mind during the run to the Final Four last year. But Caleb Love seems to be a guy that has not only taken to heart the weaknesses in his game that have been circled, you know, amongst talking heads like us and in the press and whatever, but more importantly, it looks as if he's taken the coaching for the gaps in his game that will take him to the next level and to hopefully be an NBA player. Sean, I've seen a couple of things differently. I think Inside Carolina subscribers and Tar Heel fans have seen things differently. What's been the biggest difference in Caleb Love's game that you've seen so far this year?
The biggest difference offensively is his ability to get to the basket. I think that's something we've honed it, you know, touched on for 2 years. And even in the first game, it looked like he was more explosive, stronger. And I think that's shown from his ability to turn the corner, or even with his blow-by speed of getting to the basket and finishing. You know, that was something year one couldn't really turn the corner on people. Would, you know, if he did get in the paint, would jump off that left foot and wouldn't really explode and fade away and shot an extremely low percentage. Last year was better, but still was struggling. And then, you know, we had that UCLA game in the tournament where all of a sudden he's just turning the corner and getting to the rim, finishing a lot better. And that's been the one thing from an improvement standpoint that has jumped out in terms of the whole team, is just hit it looks like the strength and explosiveness that he did add over the summer. And right now it's almost a reversal of how efficient he's been at the rim compared to last year, as well as, you know, from a 3-point. So it's almost been flip-flop, but I'd say that's been, you know, from offensive perspective, the biggest adjustment. And defensively, I mean, he's exerting effort. There's not really possessions you're saying, well, you know, he gave that one up, or he wasn't involved. He's, you know, as we just talked about, he's fighting through ball screens and he's using that length to pressure the ball handler.
Cheryl, I want to come to you as well. You've seen Caleb Love for a long time. We've been critical of him here on this podcast. I think Inside Carolina subscribers have both loved and hated him at times. But what I've seen so far this year has been a more complete player. What are some ways that you feel like he's become more complete? You know, Sean mentioned some of the defensive things, and he also talked about his ability to get to the rim. I'm seeing a guy that's looking to pass the ball. I'm seeing a guy that's hitting twos at a higher frequency. What are some things that you've seen that you feel like are making him a better player?
I definitely think the willingness to pass, not that it wasn't there before, but he's made a concerted effort to be a distributor. Now, he's right at where he usually is in his career for assists per game through four games. He's at 3.3. He's been at 3.6 basically his entire career. However, his turnovers are down a good amount. You know, again, that first year, it was a lot as far as turnovers. I think he was up towards like 3.5. And this year he's at 2, which is the lowest in his career thus far. So you're seeing someone who, even though it doesn't feel like it all the time, is taking better care of the ball. Someone who is trying to make the extra pass, I think, most of the time. There's still some of that Caleb being Caleb that's just going to be there because that's who he is. And that's one of the reasons that he was so good down the stretch last year, is because he wants to take the big shots. He wants to hit the shot that ends the game. You know, even if Carolina's up 6, he thinks, you know, hitting a 3 and putting him up 9 is going to end the game. So there's that part that you love about him. And then I think defensively, as Sean said, when he's really chosen to, he's frustrated opponents because he is, you know, he's a good athlete and he's got good size for a 2-guard in college. There aren't going to be that many guys much bigger than him at the 2-guard in college. So I think that those are a couple of ways. And then my main thing with him, though, I think is you want some balance. It seems like, you know, after his freshman year, he said, okay, I'm going to make an effort to cut down on turnovers and I've got to get my 3-point percentage up. I've got to do it. And so he did, and he dropped his turnovers by about half of a turnover per game. And of course his 3-point percentage went up by like 20 points or something ridiculous. And so it was like, okay, done sophomore season. Going into junior season, well, I've got to be more efficient at the rim. I've got to try to distribute more. So that's going to be my focus. And while he's done that, because I think it's up to 60% from two or something like that. And we just talked about the assist to turnover numbers, but his 3-point percentage is dipped. So you just want to kind of see him be balanced, not one thing kind of out of whack and the other, both things kind of on the fringes on either side. You want to see him come back to the middle on both things a little bit, because I don't think we believe he's going to shoot 60% from two the rest of the season, just like we don't think he's going to shoot 19% from three. So you want to kind of have those numbers meet a little bit. That's what I'm looking for, I think, in Portland over the next few days for him. It's just a little more balance from that 60%, 19% kind of range.
You're reading my mind, man. The next question I was going to ask is do we think that his shooting is going to come around? And if anything that I've learned from you and Sean on this show is that, you know, shooters can have game aberrations, but if they're a shooter, at some point those numbers are going to come back to where they are. One of the things I want to talk about looking back on these first four games, I think Tar Heel fans have a little bit of consternation around the fact that the Heels haven't blown anybody out, right? They've had instances, you know, like you guys mentioned, where there have been halves of halves or halves of games where they've looked really good. And there have been times when they've looked really good defensively and times they've looked elite offensively, but they've yet to kind of string that together. Do we feel like that is just a team feeling each other out, learning its identity and kind of getting back into game shape? Or do we feel like they're playing to the level of their competition? Sean, I'll go to you first.
I don't know if I would go with either one. I mean, I think to me, you know, and it really comes fair word, ball movement. And are they playing together? Are they playing for each other? And it, JMU in the first half, I think that was the first time it's like, hey, these guys are playing for each other. They're looking to get the best shot on different possessions, moving the ball. The first three that Caleb shot, you know, he hadn't taken a shot in the first few minutes, and all of a sudden set play and found himself wide open at the top of the key for catch and shoot three, which he hit. And you're up 19 at the half, or 17, whatever it was. And then the second half went back into, you know, kind of how they've been playing this year. And it seems, I don't want to say selfish, but it hasn't been looking for the teammate. You know, just looking at the College of Charleston game and the Gardner Webb, I think there was around 11 transition possessions, and not expecting this team to be Bellarmine where you're, you know, nobody's dribbling the ball and you're just passing it around, but went through those 11 possessions and there was 65 dribbles and three passes. And that's not transition.
Now you're just speaking to my heart about, you know, calling out Bellarmine and how beautiful their offense is, but please continue, sir.
But, you know, I think that to me, that was, I know there's a lot more transition against JMU, but that was a crazy number. And it just showed like RJ was getting the ball or Caleb was getting the ball, or a few times Leahy was getting the ball. They're just dribbling up. Like, this is transition. You need to be looking for your teammates. And I think that showed throughout a lot of the halves. And to me, that's going to be the biggest thing when they're in Portland is, are they willing to move the ball like they did so well towards the end of the season? Or are they going to be content to over dribble and take contested threes and half the team's just standing around? So, you know, we talked about assist to field goals made defensively. Offensively, they ranked 341 in the country. So that just shows, you know, that seven over under 17 assists that we had a few weeks ago. I think Sherelle told me I had the under, which I couldn't remember, but you can pretty much cash that one in four games in, because, you know, that's so far off from where they need to be. So long-winded answer, but I think they're in game shape. Obviously, it's, you know, they're filling in Pete Nance and working in Puff, working in some of the young guys off the bench. So there's that. But to me, it's the larger issue of, are they playing for each other? And I think we saw that the first half against JMU, but we haven't seen that the majority of the season so far.
Look, man, when you've got me as the host, we're okay with long-winded answers. Because if we've learned anything, it's that I'm a bit verbose at times. Sherelle, I want to ask you the same thing. Is this team playing down to their competition, or are they just figuring some things out?
I think it's a little bit of both, too, not to be diplomatic, but That seems to be what it is to me. And I know I've said this over and over, and I don't mean to belabor the point, but it's just not as much as the coaches want everybody to treat everything the same, as much as the fans want everybody to treat every opponent the same. That's just not reality. Like, you just, it's more difficult to get up for these early season games than it is to play in the Final Four against Duke. And these guys have been talking about that run, you know, experiencing that run, living in that run for a few months. And it's going to take some time for that to finally go away. I think we're getting close. You saw that the first team that really, really, really got their attention, that everybody was like, this could be a loss. You saw what happened. They were up 19 at halftime.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it. It's just human nature, I think, is part of it. But then also, working in Pete Nance, is he's not pretty manic, like Sean said, and like anybody who knows Carolina basketball has been saying for 7 months, they're not the same player. So there's that. And then you do have to reestablish a rhythm. Like, you just can't go back onto the court and it'd be the second half against Duke. That's not the way it works. You have to develop this stuff within the season, regardless of how much you played together over the course of, you know, 2, 3, 4 years. And that's why the assist numbers, they are, as Huber would say, they're a yellow flag. They're concerning, but I don't think you can press the panic button just yet. But 10 assists a game is not great, especially for a team like this that is experienced and that has a lot of good offensive parts. That there needs to be a lot more than that. I think it's 40 assists and 107 made field goals or something like that. Not good. That's not, you know, Huber Davis talks about Carolina basketball. That's not Carolina basketball at all. That's a lot of dribbling, a lot of pounding, a lot of standing around and watching. So I think the sooner that they can start playing these better teams and start moving and start passing the ball, get integrated, I think you'll see the offense be better. But right now they have to lean on the defense to win until the offense can come around.
And that's even considering, to rip off Roy Williams and Dean Smith, that's that, even if you include the assist, quote, the way we keep them, it's still not going to make that number, but so much better.
And it sounds absurd to say that the offense needs to come around. They had 102 points against College of Charleston. They had 80 something the other night, but it's just not, there's just something not clicking right now that I think will click soon.
Yeah. And I think we learned watching the Virginia Tech game the other night, I think College of Charleston might be legit. If nothing else, they've got some dudes, and I don't think it was as much North Carolina being terrible. Something else I want to call out too, and Shirley, you alluded to it a little bit. This team, one of the biggest knocks against them last year, as we saw in that, you know, dreaded Pittsburgh game, they played down to their competition most of the season last year, and they played up to their competition most of the season last year, as we saw on the stretch run. So when you consider that most of this team is the same group of guys from last year, it's not really shocking that they would be a team playing somewhat to the level of their competition.
What you hope for moving forward is just more maturity and, you know, the ability to handle that. You don't have to play.
Right.
It's impossible to play your A game 37 times a year. It's just not, it's not feasible. But the hope is that your B game or your B plus game is still good enough most of the time. The issue is when you let your D game come out, or your F game come out, that's when you start to have issues. So just keep it at, you know, D plus, C minus game at worst, and I think they'll be fine.
One of the things they can do to show some maturity is in their purchases of UNC memorabilia and gear. Not memorabilia so much as gear, but either way, Johnny T-Shirt's going to take care of you. That is a mature purchase. Go to Johnny T-Shirt, johnnyt-shirt.com. Use the extra 10% off that you get as a premium Inside Carolina subscriber. And hey, if you're listening or watching this show, you're not an Inside Carolina premium subscriber, I don't know what's wrong with you. For those of you watching right now, I'm getting really close to the camera because I want to show you how intent I am on you becoming a premium subscriber. Get that extra 10% off. Go ahead, join up, but then go to Johnny T-Shirt. Y'all, Thanksgiving is this week, which means as soon as the dishes are washed on Thursday, you're going to be flooded with holiday gift lists and Christmas ideas. And the Amazon gift book already came to my kids. Thanks, Mom. Go ahead and put Johnny T-Shirt on the list for every Tar Heel in your life. I promise you, they've got what that person wants. And if they don't have it, that person don't need it. All right, Johnny T-Shirt, big supporters of this show, locally owned, alumni operated. We're fans of theirs. They're such great supporters of Inside Carolina's content. We're really thankful for them. Season of thanks. We're thankful for Johnny T-shirt. We want you to be too. Take a quick break. You don't need to hear me talk. We'll let the national guys come in here and run some advertisements for a second. We'll be right back with more on this episode of the Coast to Coast podcast.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, thanks for sticking around. We appreciate y'all being here. Happy to be talking about real hoops again here on the Inside Carolina Coast to Coast podcast. I'm Joey Powell. With me, as always, Sean Moran, Sherrell McMillan. Guys, we talked about, you know, this team trying to figure things out and maybe adjusting for level of competition. Well, things are going to change really quickly in the next 48 to 72 hours. They're heading out west to play Portland on Thanksgiving Day at 1 p.m. local time. And then they've got a stretch. That's the first of five games on the road that I think will really determine a lot of how people feel about the team, but also will go a long way in cementing who they're going to be this year. Just to give you a quick rundown of that, they're playing in the PK 80. So the first game, I think, is against Villanova or Iowa State. And then depending on whether they win or lose, could be playing against Michigan State or who's the other one in the bracket?
Alabama.
Alabama, attaboy.
Yeah, just glossing over Portland.
I said Portland first, didn't I? That's the first game on Thanksgiving Day. Come on, man. Nobody's sleeping on the River Dogs or whatever that I can't remember what they are. So after that, they'll have those two games in a span of 3 days, right? Then they'll, on the way back, stop in Bloomington, Indiana for the Big Ten ACC Challenge. I know Sean's excited to watch a lot of Big Ten basketball. So if you know anything about Assembly Hall in Bloomington, that's going to be loud. Indiana fans have no love lost for North Carolina. That's going to be a really good ball game. Indiana has gotten a lot better the last couple of years. And then North Carolina, after a few days, will play at Blacksburg against a Virginia Tech team that returns a lot from last season. And depending on who you believe, is projected to be in the top third or top fourth of the conference this year in the ACC. So guys, how much do we think we're going to learn about this team over the next five games? And Sherrell, what are some things we need to look for?
Yeah, I think you'll learn a ton. I mean, did you hear that schedule? I mean, you've got Portland and then, you know, potentially like a Iowa State or a Villanova and then potentially a Michigan State or Alabama. Michigan State already has one of the best wins of the season. And then you take a break and then remember that game isn't until Sunday. The third game of the PK 80 is not until Sunday.
Late Sunday.
Yeah. So then you get on a plane and fly to Bloomington and then you have to play an Indiana team, like you said, that's going to be. This is their game. This is it. You know, this is the biggest game on their schedule this season. And, you know, I'll say I was at.
How dare you disrespect Purdue and Minnesota like that, sir?
Right, right. I was at the Assembly Hall game in 2005. I had a hookup, and I was at that game, the Sean May
homecoming.
It was technically 2004, but the 2004-05 season, and that place was insane. And that was a bad Indiana team that year. So imagine how they're going to be when they actually have a team in the top 10, or top, I think it's number 11, top 10 or 11. So you have that, and then you go to Blacksburg a few days later, which, you know, last year, I think we forget the game after Pittsburgh, I believe, was at Virginia Tech. And that was the game that really no one talks about that saved UNC season, because
Carolina had to win it.
Yeah, they had to win it. And that's a tough place to play. And it wasn't an easy win for them either. So, I mean, that is a brutal schedule. So that's first off. I hate to just go over it like you did, but it is very, very tough schedule. I think what you look for is some of the things we talked about. Caleb Love, that 3-point percentage. Does he get open looks? Does he catch fire? Because we know that once one or two go in, you know, six or seven can go in very quickly. That's one thing you look for. How much does Puff play? I think alongside Pete Nance is something to watch for, because they're kind of working him in as the backup four, it feels like right now, when Baycott goes to the bench. So will he play with Baycott some? Will he play with Nance? How much will he play? And then the other thing is, right now they're playing seven guys. Trimble, Puff, and the starting five pretty much was the rotation now. Obviously, it's only one game for Puff, but do they try to get some more time for Justin McCoy and for Tyler Nichol and DeMarco Dunn and Dontrez Styles, because they have, you know, was it six games basically in a week? Do they try to use the bench more, or are they going to just ride that top seven like he's been? I mean, all the starters are over 31 minutes a game so far this season.
Hold that thought about the rotation, but please go ahead.
Yeah, so those are a few of the things, I think. Caleb Love shooting, kind of Puff Johnson's impact, and then what the rotation looks like moving forward with so many games in such a short time.
Sean, same thing. What are some things that you want to see from this team? And it could be either end of the floor that will make you kind of have a better idea of their identity, or feel better by getting your arms around who they are right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the upcoming schedule, and when you look at the whole thing, it's definitely a tough one over 2 weeks, especially with two true road games at Indiana and at Virginia Tech. And I think Virginia Tech is probably fourth best team in the ACC. I know they did lose to Charleston, but they've got a lot of talent returning and are very, very well coached. So and then you have Indiana, but in terms of what I would like to see, I mean, it's once again, it's just improved offensive play, where they're getting easier shots and not continuing to force, or, you know, I know Caleb hit a ton of deep threes. They both, you know, Caleb and RJ hit a ton of deep threes last year, step backs, but I think right now they're not hitting them, and there's ways to find easier shots for them to hit or for teammates to hit. I also think one of the things we talked about a lot this summer was leaky block offensively. We've seen how teams have continue to play the safety for the most part in the paint, and he's hit four threes so far. If he can continue to be respectable, that's going to make teams really struggle, especially when they're trying to guard Armando down low, who hasn't I'd say offensive rebound wise hasn't been able to finish like he did last year. He's shooting a little bit lower of a percentage, but pound for pound, this is the best team in the country, or at least the top three team. The teams they're playing are not top five teams, but they are very, very good teams. So I think it's just, I think this will help get their competitive spirit up, having that competition. But at the same time, want to see the ball movement and want to just see the team having fun playing together.
Well, one more thing I add to Joey is,
sure,
you know, last year I talked about resisting temptation. I think I want to see the guards do that, because last year Armando did a great job of, like, all the talk was about how he was going to take threes and he was going to operate on the perimeter, but he realized what he was and what he was best at, and he did it. And I think the guards need to realize that what the team is best at, or the team can be its best self, when Armando is the focus of the offense. So I'd like to see them not forget him, because if that happened, I think the beginning of the second half, when JMU kind of cut into UNC's lead,
yeah,
I think there was maybe seven or eight straight possessions where Armando didn't get a touch, and that just can't happen, because he's too dominant, too good, too too involved in what UNC wants to do for him not to get touches on 7 or 8 straight possessions.
Well, and it's not as if James Madison was running 3 7-footers around him either to prevent the entry passes, right? It's just like you said, it's them taking taking what JMU wanted them to have as opposed to what they wanted. I want to kind of stay there as we're getting close to wrapping the show up. We've talked a little bit about rotations, and one of the things I've picked up on really quickly is even with Puff Johnson being out until this past week and Jalen Washington still getting back to health, we've learned really quickly that Hubert Davis has already identified who is in his circle of trust for this part of the season thus far. It's really clear who is and who is not. Sean, I want to go to you first. Do the folks that are in that circle or out of that circle surprise you at all? And if so, who is it and why?
No, I don't think anybody. I think the surprising thing is that it has gotten to the 7 so quickly, although I guess we shouldn't be surprised after last season. But, you know, Puff, I think he was playing fantastic last year at the end of the season. And when you look at the freshmen, Seth Trimble was the highest rated one. And I think everybody knew he was the one that was most ready to contribute, especially defensively, even if he wasn't a strong shooter. I think it would still be nice if they could expand it to 8. From a guard perspective, Marco Dunn hit a 3. That was nice to see. Tyler Nickel, and he had a 3 early on. He got a little playing time in the first half, so it does seem like Hubert's willing to play a little bit more in the first half. But if you don't perform or you make a mistake, you're out. And I think that's what we saw with Styles, who a lot of people had high hopes for coming into the season, and he had some lapses the first game, first half, and he's kind of been in the doghouse since. So not surprised on who is in the circle of trust. I think more from a long-term perspective, you look at that 7, and you have what, 3 of the 7 that will be around next year. So when you are looking at the long term, I think there definitely needs to be some more playing time allotted to the guys. But it's not, might be the Portland game. It's not going to be the next 2 games after that, or even IU or Virginia Tech, outside of maybe some spot minutes or somebody playing well. But you do have some time in December. So all that being said, looking forward, last thing I'll say on that is both Seth Trimble and Puff Johnson. I mean, Puff coming back, Seth being a freshman, they're still going to continue to get better. And if they get better, then, then you have a really strong 7. But ideally, if you could have a, say 8 right now, and then you whittle that down over time instead of playing everybody 30 plus minutes right off the bat.
Sherelle, are you shocked that the numbers kind of been as narrow as, or that the circle of trust has been as narrow as it has been thus far?
No, I thought it would be 8. So I guess 1 less than I thought. Because Dontre Styles, I think we all kind of assumed that he would take the next step, freshman to sophomore, after some of the things he did in the tournament, and be able to really help out specifically on the defensive end. And that just hasn't happened yet. I'll ask y'all this. How many minutes has Dontre Styles played in the second half this season?
That's a big fat 0 there, Big Daddy.
0. And I think that, to me, that says everything. That the coach just isn't quite there yet. And trusting him to do what the coach wants him to do. And Puff, first game back, 13 minutes. So the 7 players who it is, again, it's not surprising. I do wonder what Jalen Washington will look like long for competitive basketball for so long. But I do think from a talent perspective and what this team really needs, I think his skill set would be very welcome right now. That trail big who can shoot from the perimeter and who has a long wingspan, who can block shots. It's just that, you can't expect much from him after not playing for a year and a half and jumping into, ACC play. But I do think what he provides is kind of, I think what you would need or potentially want is that eighth guard or eighth person. Because if we're being honest, what we talked about this, there's not enough minutes to go around for everyone on the team, because RJ Davis and Caleb Love are going to play 30 minutes a game. That's just the way it's going to be. So there's not a ton of time for the other guards. So I think it's like, where can you get something that's lacking on the team if the other guards who maybe have strengths like shooting aren't going to play as much because of RJ and Caleb? And that's where I see Jalen potentially helping out. That's where Talon Nickel in spots, I think, can help out, because they do need a little more shooting. And it doesn't have to come from the guards. It can come from anyone on the floor. So, yeah, I rambled a little bit, but I think the seven is a good seven. You would hope that it gets to eight, and I think eight's a really good rotation.
Sherrill, should I be shocked that seven are all fairly defensive-minded players, or they're guys that have shown that they have a propensity to play really good defense at times, if not all the time?
Not at all. I think Hubert Davis made it abundantly clear last year with the way he went about organizing playing time that defense was going to be paramount. It was going to be the thing that really kept you on the court. There were other players who did other things much better than their defense, and they didn't get on the court at all. And they're no longer here. So it was pretty clear from the moment he took over, I think, the moment we saw him in games take over, that he wanted strong defensive players. So Johnson and Trimble are probably the two best defensive players who aren't in the starting five. So it makes a ton of sense. And some of the things lineup wise that you're going to be able to do with those seven, like you talk about a lineup with like Seth, you know, say you were up 15 or 16 and you really wanted to kind of choke the lead and not let the other team do anything. Roll out, you know, something like Caleb, Leakey, Huff, Armando, and Nance. You know, that's 6'3", 6'8", 6'8", 6'10", 6'10", all can move, our athletic. So there's a lot of options, I think, especially defensively, that Hubert Davis has at his disposal with that seven.
I think just one thing to add, you know, you think back to the Baylor game and UCLA game where Styles was better suited in a Marquette Baylor type of game where mm-hmm. you're going against better athletes and stronger players. And then Puff, UCLA going forward where more skill. And I do think I've been impressed with Tyler Nickel in the minutes that he has gotten. I know he's only hit 1-3 and defensively is a concern. So that goes against what we were saying, which we don't, probably why we only saw him 2 minutes against JMU. But from an offensive perspective, have liked, you know, he's not afraid to shoot it. He's playing hard. He moves the ball well, and he makes quick decisions, which I think is really important in terms of if he gets the ball, he's looking to attack or put pressure, mm-hmm. or it's going up or he's passing. So I do think I'll be interested to see how his case plays out, because once you get into the ACC, more importantly, the tournament, based on styles of play, or even, I mean, thinking UVA, you know, come ACC where maybe Nickel gets in and they're going to give up more 3-point shots. So, you know, he comes in and stretches the defense, for instance. So I think he could be used depending on situation. So we'll be interested to see how he continues to fare as well as the playing time he gets.
That's a good point. We learned last year that Hubert Davis was much more inclined to use an NBA style, not only of offensive sets and sort of game plan, but maybe to your point, the deployment of players is going to mirror that much more of the NBA than it has in years past, where he does use a situational player like Dontrezl Styles or a guy like Tyler Nickel just to come in and you know, break down a team that's not very strong on the perimeter. All right, guys, last question. We'll get out of here. I know you guys have the turkey a basting, and Sean, please tell me you're not a canned cranberry sauce guy. Okay. All right. If you were, I was going to actually just end this show and never invite you back on. Thank you for making me feel better about what people out there on the left coast are doing with their cranberries nowadays. Last question before we get out of here. Let's analyze. And we talked about the road trip that's coming up. I want you guys to tell me what you need to see on this road trip that will, you know, in your mind, be a good result for the Tar Heels. Sean, go first.
5-0.
5-0. No. So anything less than 5-0, Sean's not happy. All right.
No. Well, probably because all these teams are beatable or should be beatable. I mean, but I don't. If you look at KenPom and say Alabama makes it the championship, they're probably favored in two games and underdogs and, you know, slight underdogs in three. So I would say four and one being realistic, but three and two, I wouldn't be thrilled, you know, next time we're on, they go 3-2, unless it was, you know, I could see if they make it to the championship game and play Alabama, you know, that could be a really entertaining game, especially some of those matchups and how well Alabama's been playing. So, I mean, if you lose kind of like, what was it? The Vegas, Kentucky, UNC game, when they won, it was the back and forth. Like, you can't complain about that one. But if it's an ugly game where they just get blown out or go to Bloomington and get stomped by an average Big Ten team, I won't be thrilled. So
Sean, is there anything in the Big Ten that's not average? I mean, let's be honest here. I know
Ohio
you.
State football. That's the only thing.
Talking about basketball here, bro. You're on the wrong podcast. You want to talk about football?
I had to go to football.
I love the fact that you never hesitate a chance to get some Big Ten basketball shade in there. I love you for it. Sherrell, same thing, man. Before we get out of here, what do you want to see, or what do you need to see to consider this a good road trip for the Tar Heels?
Yeah, I think at minimum three wins. And then I think at least one complete game. You prefer it not be against Portland. You prefer it would be against Villanova, potentially Iowa State or Michigan State, Indiana or Virginia Tech. You'd prefer it be against one of those. But just one complete game where from start to finish, you know, the defense is crisp, the offense, the ball is moving. And they look like the number one team in the country. They look like the most experienced, you know, starting five in Carolina history. They look like a team that has the, you know, preseason ACC player of the year, that has another first team preseason, that has potential All-Americans, that has all this talent. They just need to look like that, you know, at least once. Twice would be great, but at least once. And I'd feel confident that it was more of, you know, building into something versus some kind of systemic issue. And then it's funny, Sean, you know, Carolina's kind of entering the Big Ten portion of the schedule. You know, over the next month, they could have Michigan State, Indiana, and then they definitely have Ohio State and Michigan. So, you know, arguably could be the top four in the Big Ten over the next month.
It's the summer of Sean, man.
You know, and they haven't dominated the Big Ten lately like they used to at the beginning of the Roy Williams era. So, but, you know, Michigan State, I think that could be, I mean, if they make it past Villanova or Iowa State, I think that whatever game that will be a really good one. Ohio State is not, you know, that should be a win. And then at Bloomington will be tough. So, you know, it'll probably hurt if they do lose to one or two or even three Big Ten teams, but hopefully they can power through it.
The other thing I like too about the schedule is the potential for different styles.
Yeah.
You look at, you know, how Villanova plays versus how Virginia Tech plays versus how Indiana plays versus how Michigan State plays. All different. There are obviously similarities, but you've got some very NBA styled offensive and defenses. Then you have some very, you know, old school kind of motion flex offenses, and then you have kind of new age where everybody's, you know, is five out like Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of styles that are going to be playing over the next, you know, week and a half. And I'll be curious to see how they respond to that. So that's a big challenge too. How they respond to all those different styles.
Yeah. I mean, just looking at the potential finals, you know, whoever they play on the last day of the PK80, whether it's Michigan State or Alabama, those two teams are polar opposite of each other, right? Like not the same at all.
And I think, you know, last year up until the Duke game, it was, well, where are the good wins? And we already know in the ACC, it's going to be Duke, UVA, Virginia Tech, and there's probably not much after that. So if they can stack some of these wins now, you know, that helps solidify seed discussions come March. And to the Big Ten's credit, you know, we saw last year they kind of beat each other up and they all were giving each other the quad one wins, and given there could be three or four games there, that's just, you know, the stuff that UNC needs to build now, which they're not going to get for the most part in ACC play.
Well, guys, I do want to
sad to say
I do want to issue one mea culpa before I get out of here. I did not mean to besmirch the good name of the Portland Pilots. Portland Pilots, not the River Dogs, who are, as everyone knows, a minor league baseball team. Guys, I appreciate it. Always love having you. Love doing these podcasts. Hope everybody loves being a part of them and involving themselves, whether it's listening or downloading or watching on YouTube, whatever you do. We appreciate you being a part of this little family that we got here. Guys, I'm excited. Thank you so much for your time. Oh, you got two pennies, Shrill? You about to throw some copper at me?
Yeah, we got time for two pennies.
Man, I always got time for your two pennies, man.
To Sean's point about stacking wins, you know, this is a thing I've always talked about, but the NCAA first and second round is in Greensboro this year, and there's a team down the road that they usually compete with for that spot. I don't think they'll, because of things that have happened in the past, and I don't think both of them will be there. So that's something to think about, that you're competing for essentially two home games in the NCAA tournament. So that's a big deal. And then to Drake Powell, UNC's lone 2024 commit, started his season this past weekend and opened with 27 points in a win. So a good first showing from him.
Sean, what about you, man? Do you have two pennies that you'd like to throw into the fountain before we get out of here?
No, I think Shrell covered it. But in terms of other things, like to see, hopefully the three-point shooting goes up, and looking forward to watching Leaky defensively, you know, against some of these top teams. But, and actually, I guess last thing is in terms of Armando, there could be some good big man matchups that we get to watch, and you know, just see how one of the best players in the country is competing, you know, against some other top bigs that will be, whether it's a little taller or longer or different, you know, different versatility. So looking forward to seeing that.
Fellas, thank you so much. Thank you for the final 4 cents of the show. I wouldn't want to get out of here on $9.96. So thank y'all for rounding up, making it work. Guys, have a great Thanksgiving to all of our listeners and viewers. We appreciate you being here. We're thankful for you. Have a great Thanksgiving with your families. And we will be back very soon. Again, as soon as we get to the ACC championship portion of the football season, we'll be back doing these weekly. So guys, thanks so much. Appreciate you being a part of this show. Appreciate what you bring to the show, because y'all make it, honestly. Nobody's here to hear me. And thanks to our listeners. Remember, rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. Special shout out to Johnny T-Shirt for sponsoring. Thanks to John Siegley for producing. But for Sean Moran, for Sherelle McMillan, I'm Joey Powell. This has been Inside Carolina's Coast to Coast podcast. We will see you soon. Late.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.